This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The White House and the Bush campaign do not challenge John Kerry's record as a Vietnam War hero, but a TV ad by a group called the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth does. The Democratic nominee says his TV commercials are all positive, but there are an awful lot of anti-Bush ads out there on TV. Both sets of political commercials are sponsored by so-called 527 groups, political committees that raise money for advertising and get-out-the-vote campaigns. And while they're ostensibly independent, most are very clearly for, or against, one of the major party candidates. In 2002, the McCain-Feingold law prohibited national political parties from raising unlimited, unregulated soft money contributions. 527s seem to be a loophole. The name comes from the section of the IRS code that covers them. Anti-Bush and pro-Kerry groups have been quickest off the mark. They've already raised over $125 million. Republicans hope to curb 527s at first, but now pro-Bush and anti-Kerry groups are building support. Later in the program, NPR's Ann Garrels joins us at the end of another tour in Baghdad. But first, the rising power of 527s. If you contribute to one, give us a call and tell us why. Should they be covered by campaign finance reform laws? And if you have questions about how truthful the ads you're seeing on TV are, we'll have a fact checker on hand. Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now is Derek Willis, a writer and database specialist at the Center for Public Integrity. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me.
So exactly what is a 527?
Well, it's a nonprofit political committee. In other words, it's a group that is organized specifically to influence an election. And that could be a state election or a federal election or even a local election.
Is this what we used to call a PAC?
It's sort of what we used to call a PAC. Every PAC actually is a 527 for tax purposes. But normally we used to think about elections in two ways. Either there were federal elections or there were state elections. And that's pretty much all we ever thought about. 527s, they can play in both or in neither. They're sort of a one-size-fits-all type of political committee. The best thing about them from a regulatory standpoint for those that have them or give to them is that they're not bound by federal election rules or by state election rules.
Are they donations to them tax deductible?
They're not tax deductible, but the committees themselves do not pay tax on the donations that they receive.
Now, I understand there are two different kinds of 527s.
Well, actually, there are probably more than that. But in general, there are a number of 527s that are specifically oriented to this presidential election in November. And we've seen a rise of that, obviously, in the last 10 months or so. But there are also 527s who orient themselves exclusively or mainly to state races. For example, the Republican and Democratic gubernatorial associations. They support state races and only state races.
Now, if you are in favor of more books, could you be a 527 as well as supporting a candidate?
You could be. If you're in favor of more books, you probably, a 527 might not be your best, most efficient use of money, but it is an option. The other thing about 527s is that, unlike the federal election process, whereby if you're going to form a PAC to give to a candidate or to give to several candidates, you have to go through a certain number of qualifying factors to reach that designation. With a 527, you basically need a bank account and you need to file a form with the IRS saying, yes, I am a 527, and that's pretty much all there is to it.
The point I was trying to make is you can support an idea or an interest rather than a politician.
Definitely, and in fact, the rules, such as they are, prohibit a 527 from giving money directly to a federal candidate. And so many of these are organized around thematic issues rather than candidate issues.
And indeed, they're not supposed to coordinate with political campaigns.
Well, that's an outbreak of the 2002 McCain-Feingold campaign finance law, which really narrowly tailored the definitions for coordinations and put in place pretty sharp restrictions. They are not supposed to, as you said, coordinate at all in terms of the message of their ads or even there are even coordination limits on hiring former staffers who work for each other's campaigns, that sort of thing.
What about the timing of ads? And I raise that point particularly, and I'm sure you're aware of this. Obviously, after the Democratic National Convention, John Kerry, who had spurned the government money, the matching funds during the primary campaign, as soon as he's the nominee, he accepted the federal money, $75 million for the general election campaign. He says he's not going to start spending that until the end of this month. His campaign has gone dark, except the 527s all of a sudden leapt in to fill in the void.
It's a nice position for him to be in, to be able to say, I'm not going to spend any of the $75 million in federal matching money that my campaign has received. The 527s do enable him to do that. There's no question about it. Without that, I think it's almost certain that he would have to start spending that $75 million very quickly, because what you don't want, especially in a national race, is dead air. You don't want to be on your opponent to be on the air unchallenged by you or your allies. In this case, John Kerry is not doing it through his campaign committee. He's doing it mostly, or at least it's to his benefit, the work that's being done by these 527 organizations.
In a totally uncoordinated way. Now, 527s, though, do not just put out advertisements.
In fact, I think it stands to reason that many of the most effective ones will be the ones that do voter registration and get out the vote efforts. Because television advertisement, while it is a huge part of modern political campaigns, in an election that is as closely contested as this one is expected to be, the grail, if you will, is to find new or undecided voters and make sure that they vote. And television advertisements can do some of that work, but a lot more of it is being focused on the groups that go door to door, that take down people's information, and then repeatedly contact them with information about issues that they say are important to them.
Well, some would say the important thing is to get out your supporters to vote, whether they're, you know, the undecideds can stay home. Your supporters should go.
And that is a tremendous concern. But one of the 527s, the major 527 organizations called ACT, America Coming Together, they're actually engaged not only in turning out what would likely be called the Democratic base, but also in finding brand new voters. And that's really something that is unusual and potentially, I think, could have the greatest impact. They were able to do it last year in Philadelphia for mayoral election, and that group's ability to really turn out new voters, to create votes from where there had been no votes before, it could be a very big part of this presidential race.
And they make no secret of their orientation. It's headed by Parol Dickies, isn't it?
Right, and Steve Rosenthal.
Former Clinton staffer.
And also by the former political director of the AFL-CIO. So, yeah, they make no bones about what they're trying to do.
Now, are there any restrictions on what 527s can do?
There are. They must abide by the same restrictions that any other political actor would abide by when it comes to a federal race. And those are, namely, restrictions on broadcast advertisements. What a 527 can't do is, for instance, within 60 days of the general election, they cannot run a television ad that is paid for by union money or corporate money. They can pay for an ad with individual contributions, but not with general treasury money from either a corporation or a union. And so that's why you see a lot of these 527s are raising money from very, very wealthy individuals, people who have the ability to give 6- and 7-figure checks. So that's the major restriction on their activities.
Let's get some listeners involved in this conversation. Our guest is Derek Willis of the Center for Public Integrity. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email totn@npr.org. Dave is with us on the phone from Tallahassee.
Hey, I was just listening to the corporate sponsorship thing, and I totally agree that as long as you're sponsored by a corporation or a private interest like that, you shouldn't be running ads like that so close to the election. But as long as it's independently funded, isn't it more a question of free speech? I mean, they're just voicing their opinions as an independent organization.
That's a good point. And really, that exists because the McCain-Feingold campaign law had very little way to restrict that type of speech, that type of campaign spending, without running afoul of the Constitution. And so the Constitution and case law, prior campaign finance case law, have said, yes, you can restrict corporate-funded and union-funded political advertisements or political spending. But it's very difficult to restrict spending done by individuals, even individuals who band together or who join what is otherwise a membership organization. So, and I think that's one of the things that the framers of the law really had trouble doing. And I think, yeah, there is a free speech issue there. And that's why they sort of stayed away from banning these types of groups, because I don't think they could do it constitutionally.
Others, excuse me, Dave, but others would say, first of all, aren't corporations persons under the law, and aren't their free speech rights being impinged on? Well, they challenged McCain-Feingold on that very basis.
Well, I've never really agreed with corporations being considered persons. I mean, I believe them to be more of services for a community. Really, I think when you're talking about politics, corporations are just going to exist mainly to make a profit. So I can't really sympathize with corporations, putting lots of information out there because they can afford to, whereas someone with less money gets less of a voice.
What if that person with less money is, say, the head of Microsoft? He's got loads of money.
Well, he does have loads of money, but, I mean, he also, out of his own money, I wonder how much he's actually going to put into getting someone elected and how much he'll actually benefit personally from it. I see corporations as being able to benefit more from having a governing body in politics so that they can benefit from larger sweeping reforms, whereas specific people will not necessarily benefit that much from a change in government.
Okay, Dave, thanks very much for your point. Appreciate it.
Right on. Great show.
Why don't we hear from some other callers as well? And this is David. David's on the line with us from Berkeley, California.
Yeah, hi. I just donated $25 last Friday to Swift Boat Veterans for the Truth. Reason being, I read in the Boston Globe website that Kerry had only served 4 months in Vietnam, that he had had 3 full hearts in a very short period of time, mostly for scratches. And I thought that said a lot about his, making a big deal about his military service. I'd like to make the comment that I think that the 527 process is actually a very democratizing system whereby entrepreneurial political voices can get into the political fray. And I'd also like to ask the question, which is this: how much money has gone into 527s on the Republican side? I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
David, thanks for the call. How much on both sides of the ledger?
Well, Republicans haven't been as quick to raise a lot of money with 527s. It amounts to, if you take in all the sort of allied Republican organizations, probably somewhere between $8 and $10 million in terms of those that are oriented toward a federal race. The Republican Governors Association has raised $30 million for their 527, and that's quite a bit of money. But for the most part, Republicans tried to shut down 527s, or at least have them regulated, and there's some debate over whether that was done out of political conviction or out of or philosophical conviction or political convenience. But really, they tried to do that, and therefore they've been sort of late in getting on the 527 bandwagon. But let's not let's put it this way: I would not count them out. There are plenty of motivated Republican donors out there who probably would appreciate, as the caller did, donating to an organization that would press their beliefs or attack their opponents.
Now, these organizations, the 527s, do have to publish lists of their contributors, but once, 4 times a year, right?
Well, they can do it. They have to do it at least 4 times a year. Some do it every month, which for organizations like the one I work for, we very much appreciate. But most people do, most organizations do it quarterly. And then around the election, they have to file one right before the election and one just after the election. But it is a process that has just been, I mean, not just been, but in the last 4 years is relatively new. Prior to 2000, 527 groups had no disclosure whatsoever.
So this, if deep pockets are behind one campaign or another, eventually you'll be able to find out whether who it was.
Yeah, and really, disclosure was an important, was a very important legislative goal in 2000, and I think it's sort of shown that what it does is it does help to educate the public about who these groups are and what they stand for.
We're talking about the rising role of 527 groups with Derek Wills of the Center for Public Integrity. When we come back from a short break, we'll truth squad some of the ads that these groups have been running. You're invited to join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about 527's independent political groups that are giving their money for advertising and get out the vote campaigns this year. How effective do you think they are? Do you think they need more regulation? Have you seen an ad that you have questions about? You're invited to join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Derek Willis of the Center for Public Integrity, and joining us now to talk about the accuracy of some of these advertisements is Brooks Jackson, director of the Political Fact Check Project at the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. He's with us by phone from his home in Maryland. Nice of you to be with us today.
Great to be here, Neil.
Tell us a little bit about what your project involves.
Well, what it involves basically is looking at TV ads that the candidates or others put out, also pronouncements of other sorts, and first assessing whether they make any factual claim at all. When they do, and if it looks fishy, we look into it and we post what we find.
Do you find that you're scrutinizing 527-type ads a little bit more often than the ads put out by the campaigns themselves?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that we found examples of candidate ads and examples of 527 ads that are misleading or sometimes downright false. I just can't make a distinction in terms of degrees of being misleading.
Well, probably that's probably a wise decision on your ads have come out a lot earlier this election season. So will the campaigns eventually level out to be more accurate as their advertisements? I mean, do the campaigns respond to fact checks by yours and other groups?
People who run political ads are, in my experience, and I've been fact-checking ads for a long time at CNN, going back 12 years now, I find they're all pretty much incorrigible. You call them on it, the ads never get pulled off the air, and they don't change it the next time either.
Let's get a caller in on the conversation. Dave is with us from West Liberty, Iowa.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I'm rather incensed about that Vietnam Swift Boat Veterans ad.
Mm-hmm.
That one seems to be nothing but a pack of lies, and everything I've read says those people basically weren't there. And so my question is about, who is checking the truth and what can be done about it?
Well, before we ask that question to Brooks Jackson, let's hear a bit of that ad. This is an ad released last week by a group called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, and it questions Senator Kerry's record in Vietnam.
If you have any question about what John Kerry's made up, just spend 3 minutes with the men who served with him 30 years.
I served with John Kerry.
I served with John Kerry.
John Kerry has not been honest about what happened in Vietnam.
He is lying about his record.
I know John Kerry is lying about his first Purple Heart because I treated him for that injury.
John Kerry lied to get his Bronze Star. I know. I was there. I saw what happened.
His account.
Again, that's an excerpt from the ad from the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Brooks Jackson, have you had a chance to take a look at that?
Boy, have we. We posted an article late Friday on our website, factcheck.org. We updated it again this morning because of a new affidavit by one of the people who appears in that ad.
The guy who says he's a doctor who said he treated Kerry apparently never did.
Well, we don't know that. What we do know is that
it was unsigned.
Let him answer.
Signed by a different person.
I'm sorry, would you say that again, please? We missed it.
Yes. What we know is that the medical record of that injury is signed by a different person. That doesn't prove that the fellow who spoke in that ad didn't also treat it or wasn't also present, but it is a discrepancy.
There's also been a sort of back and forth over the past several days from the officer who, in fact, commended then Lieutenant Junior Grade Kerry and signed his commendation for two of the medals involved and then supported him in one of his senatorial campaigns and then put out an affidavit questioning his record and then in an interview with the Boston Globe retracted that and then in another affidavit apparently retracted that.
Well, that's right. And for full details, check our website. It's far more than we can go into here. But what you have here are two different views of reality. The crewmen on Kerry's boat, with one exception, support him and back up what he's saying about both the Bronze Star and the Silver Star incident. These others who say they served with Kerry, now they don't say they served on the same boat. Remember, these Swift boats, I think, had a crew of 12 or 13, very small crew.
Mm-hmm.
Three of the gentlemen who appear in this ad served on two other boats that they say were only yards away when
John Kerry pulled a Army Special Forces lieutenant from the water. They say there was no hostile fire at the time. The Kerry's crewman and the Jim Rassman, the fellow who was rescued, say otherwise. They say they were a few yards away. The official citation for the Bronze Star, and I don't know if it's accurate, but this is what it says, and it's a record from that period, not from right now today. That says that the rescue happened a few hundred yards away. We're never going to be able to resolve this 35 years later and on the other side of the planet, but what we try to do is lay out what we do know in as much detail as possible, link people back to original documents, that sort of thing. And unfortunately, it's got to be up to us voters to sort it all out and figure out what we believe.
Yeah, it's just when those lies get out there, even if they're retracted, the damage is done. I mean, once it's out there, it's out in the public.
Well, and we can't call these lies. And they haven't been retracted, but they are there, and people are going to have to sort through this muddle for themselves.
And
we have conflicting views of reality.
It's very misleading for the Swift Boat veterans to say they served with Kerry when, you know that's a very broad view of the word with.
That's true. I was a Navy veteran myself. I served on a much bigger craft, a cruiser, and it's worth remembering that these Swift boats, being very small, if you served on another Swift boat that was on the same river and the river was 50 feet wide, they may have a colorable claim here for serving with Kerry. They don't say they served under him or on his boat, though.
Dave, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. As we go through this, again, we talked about the remarkable timing of the 527s on the Democratic side emerging just as John Kerry had to stop spending money, Derek Willis. In this instance, the Bush campaign, the White House say, we don't condone this. They point, Senator McCain has denounced it. He's called in the White House to denounce it. That they haven't done, but they won't denounce it. But this is certainly in concert with their campaign.
It certainly is a benefit to them in the sense that it raises questions at the least about Senator Kerry and about the claims that he has made over the years, and especially in this campaign. But I think it is what is sort of telling about the whole episode is that when Senator McCain asked the White House to denounce this ad, this reply of the White House, the spokesman Scott McClellan basically said the president thought that he got rid of this problem, this soft money problem, when he signed Senator McCain's law. So really, it's almost back to a McCain-Bush type of argument, because now McCain's saying, well, these should be regulated, and Bush said, well, I thought your law took care of that.
They also said, and there are plenty of anti-Bush ads out there sponsored by groups that the Democratic candidate has not denounced. Let's listen to one of those. This from MoveOn.org.
If George Bush had told the truth a year ago, here's what he might have said.
My fellow Americans, we have no evidence that Iraq has stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. No connection to 9/11. No nuclear capability. They pose no imminent threat to America.
If he said that, would we have gone to war, spending $125 billion and losing more than 500 American lives?
That, again, a MoveOn.org ad. And as I understand it, Derek, some of these ads have been moving back and forth. They're produced by one 527 and then sponsorship sometimes picked up by another 527.
There is, as far as the coordination limits go, they don't apply to coordination among 527 groups. So literally they could have people work for each other group. For each other, they could pass money or even, as you said, content back and forth between those groups. In fact, what we've seen lately is many of them banding together to sponsor different types of activities, whether it be television ads or get out the vote activities or concerts to raise money, again, to oppose Bush.
Brooks Jackson, have any of the Democratic ads been as controversial thus far as the Swift Boat Veterans ad?
Well, we found some to criticize. I don't know how to measure degrees of being misleading. So we basically take them as they come, try to compare what they say with what we can show factually to be correct. It is true that several of these 527 ads on the Democratic side we've taken issue with on a factual basis. The one you just played wasn't. It's interesting if you listen to that. That's all opinion. They say, here's what George Bush should have said about Iraq. Mm-hmm. If he did that, would you have voted for him? Would you support him now? That's fair game. They don't make a factual statement that you can check.
If there is one that, we won't use the word lie. How about Whopper?
Well, we try not to characterize too broadly here. If something is truly misleading and would bring you to a conclusion different than you might reach if you knew all the facts or got the facts in an accurate way, then we'll characterize it that way. But I don't think we've used the word lie, for example, to characterize any ad so far, because I'm not a mind reader. I don't know what's intentional on the part of the people who put these out and what they might actually believe to be factual themselves. We just try to compare it with the record.
Let's hear now from Charles. Charles is on the line with us from Philadelphia.
Yes, I was wondering, do the networks, are they obligated to check the accuracy before they put an ad on? I mean, could I take an ad out and say, I don't know, George Bush, beats his wife or something like that, or likes to set dogs on fire? I mean, would they say, well, we're not going to run that, or what?
I'm not sure. Derek, is that up your alley?
Well, I know that there are no requirements that they do so. And in fact, they can, but they can, television stations and networks, and I'm sure Brooks knows this as well, they can decline to run advertisements, political advertisements, based on an acceptability standard.
Neil, this is actually a fascinating area because it's worse than that, actually. If a television station or radio station, for that matter, takes an ad from any candidate for a particular race, they must, by law, take all the ads from all candidates without censorship. And even if they know it's false, they have to do that. That doesn't apply to other ads, including ads from 527, so you see networks sometimes refusing to run them. MoveOn.org ad, for example, CBS refused during, what was it, the Super Bowl, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember. So, but voters should know that there are no consumer protections here when it comes to candidate ads. The Federal Trade Commission is supposedly on the job protecting you against false ads for things like children's toys or detergents or whatever. But under our laws, there is no law against a politician lying to you as much as they want. And there probably shouldn't be under the Constitution. Candidates, I mean, who would enforce it? Would you want John Ashcroft enforcing Truth in Advertising against John Kerry or a Democratic Attorney General doing the same against a Republican candidate? I don't think so.
Charles, thank you.
Can I just ask one thing? If you put a lie on, is anybody liable for, defamation of character or anything like that?
Yes, technically, this is Brooks Jackson again, but Supreme Court in its basic rulings on libel has made it extremely difficult for public figures, and candidates are the ultimate public figures, to collect for money damages for libel. So you very, very seldom see a libel suit brought. It would take forever to litigate it. The election would be over. The worst that could happen is you'd maybe win a money judgment against him, but you have to prove that they either knew they were lying or published something with reckless disregard for the truth.
I think it's and published something with reckless disregard.
Yes.
Yeah. Charles, thank you.
That's all right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
We're talking about these independent political groups that are running television ads, mostly Democratic thus far, but Republicans are beginning to catch up in the campaigns. They're called 527s for the section of the Internal Revenue Service's code that they come under. Our guests are Derek Willis of the Center for Public Integrity and Brooks Jackson of the Annenberg Political Fact-Checking Project. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Now, this is Tom, who's with us from Hudson, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering if your guest could verify, it's sort of an implied lie in some of these ads. Kerry served 4 months in Vietnam. He was sent home because he got his third Purple Heart. As I recall, on the Swift boats, people got shot up pretty quick, and the average time of service on those boats was only about 6 months for all the people who were there.
Is that something that's come up in your fact-checking, Brooks Jackson?
Actually, that's a figure I haven't heard before, so I can't comment on that. The first thing I'd want to know, of course, is whether that average time included people who were killed in action before the end of their tour of duty.
Statistics are difficult to parse out like that. Does the 4 months include Kerry's tour of service on a I think it was a frigate offshore?
No, this is just his time on Swift boats.
So that was his second tour. Or a second part of the
I believe
service.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Was that it, Tom?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. And now let's talk with Chrissy. Chrissy's on the phone from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi there. I work for 527, and I do door-to-door canvassing every day. And I just wanted to share some of my experiences. I've had a broad range of experiences from you know, slams in my face to people asking me to sit down and eat dinner with them. I think that it is my constitutional right to go door to door and talk to people about issues that pertain to them, and not so much the ads we hear on TV and, you know, a lot of jargon that both parties throw around. I think people are very receptive on the most part to what we're trying to do. People who aren't are very critical, and we don't waste a lot of time with them.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Chrissy, did you support the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform law?
Yes, I do, and I think there should be more campaign finance.
Should it cover 527s?
Yes, but our 527 isn't endorsing any political campaign at this point or any political party. We're talking to people about issues such as the economy, jobs, and you know, the outsourcing bill that's going through.
All right, what's the name of it?
It's Working America, funded by the AFL-CIO.
Okay. And I think, to be fair, Chrissy, Republicans would say this is not a it's probably going to take a side.
What?
Republicans might say this, since it's funded by the AFL-CIO, might take one side in the campaign. The AFL-CIO has certainly endorsed one candidate.
I think if the Republicans, you know, ever protected outsourcing, we would take their side as well.
Okay. Fair enough, Chrissy. Thanks very much for the phone
call.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can get one more caller in. John is on the line from Philadelphia.
Yes, I was wondering, I just read a great book by Robert Reich called Reason, and one of the things he says in it is rather than having individuals contribute to like a 527 or to a political party, then having the party know exactly where this money is coming from, to have a nonpartisan blind trust where people donate to that, and then this trust gives the money anonymously to the candidates, and what you thought about that. And I'll take it off the air.
Okay, John, thanks very much. Well, Derek, I guess that's in your category, and it comes along with the question, is there any law that could keep outside money out of politics? But go ahead.
It's an interesting concept, and I think it's something that has been sort of bandied about a little more recently, but especially since the passage of the McCain-Feingold law, which is certainly the most far-reaching in terms of constitutional limits on money. But I think there's something to be said for the process of donating money to a candidate or a cause and being willing to put your name behind that, saying I'm going directly to this cause or this candidate. And I think actually one of the things about the growth of 527s is that no longer are they, you know, the national parties raising this type of money. And now what you can do with a 527 is you can target your donation very, very explicitly to a particular candidate or a particular cause and not have to worry that, hey, if I give money to the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, that it might be used to support some candidate that I've never heard of in a state that I've never been to. And so I think they're sort of competing, you know, systems or competing ideas going on there, but it is an interesting concept.
Derek Willis, thank you very much.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Derek Willis, a writer and database specialist at the Center for Public Integrity. He was with us here in Studio 3A. Brooks Jackson, we appreciate your time today.
Great to be here, Neil. Thanks for the opportunity.
Brooks Jackson, director of the Political Fact Check Project at the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg Public Policy Center, joined us by phone from his home in Maryland. When we come back from a break, NPR's Ann Garrels joins us just back from another tour in Baghdad. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News.